Hello and welcome to another episode of BFRR, our Bitcoin, Fiat and Rock'n'Roll podcast that explores the intersection of traditional finance, digital assets and digital currencies and helps you to understand how digital money and digital assets will evolve in the future. My name is Manuel and today I have a very special candidate again and a guest here in this podcast, Dr. Annika Patz. You are a partner at WIPOC and you've been in this podcast already a couple of times, but only in German. And today, finally, also again, back at the podcast in English. Welcome, Annika.
Well, yeah, thank you, Manuel. Thank you for having me. And it's great to be back on the podcast.
Absolutely. And for those listeners that have not listened to the episodes in German, please give a little introduction into yourself, what you do professionally in the field of digital assets and digital money, because you are definitely one of the key experts that we have here in Germany in this field. Please give a little overview.
Yeah, happy to do that. So, as you already mentioned, I'm a partner at WIPOC. WIPOC is a law firm. We're based in Germany and have four offices here in Hamburg. I'm based in Berlin and my team is also distributed in Germany. And we're focusing on everything around regulatory topics of banking regulation and payment services regulation. And we have a strong focus on blockchain and DLT-based businesses. So we did some of the first licenses back in the days, like when Coinbase entered the German market with a crypto custody and trading licenses. So this was then under the German regimes. And we did the licenses for Bullish, and we also did the MiCA transition for a lot of players in the market that you see here in Germany and also other European countries. And we also deal with the pilot regime, so the what we will be talking about today as well. So the DLT pilot regime, we did the first licenses for 21X back in the day and also for 360X. So yeah, I would say I started in this field when there was no regulation around crypto custodians, when it was still like everyone could build anything, and started back in 2018 then. So I've seen a lot of new upcoming regulations and also a lot of maybe businesses flourish but also vanish. So it's quite interesting to be now at a time where we see that projects are not just a proof of concept, but they're actually live and in place. And I think it's very interesting field we're dealing here with.
Yeah, vast experience in the space, especially here in Germany as one of the key experts that we've invited into the podcast quite a lot. Today, as you said, focus will be, among others, the DLT pilot regime, which is this regulatory, it used to be a sandbox, right? Now it's not a sandbox anymore in Europe, I would say, but a regulatory framework that allows for the use of distributed ledger technology, blockchain technology in capital market settlement, right? And that is part of the overall market integration and supervision package, MISP, that is to be introduced in Europe under the One Europe, One Market agenda until, I think, end of this year. Could you give us a little overview what this MISP, this market integration and supervision package is, and how the DLT pilot regime fits in there?
Thank you for the question. So what is MISP? You can think of it as the big update to the EU's market rulebook. So the European Commission published it back in, I think, December 2025 as part of the Savings and Investment Union strategy, which is the SIU, which is basically the plan to get Europe's capital markets working more smoothly and across borders. So capital markets union is something we're talking about, I think, like for 10, 15 years now. And this market integration package has three main goals. It wants to simplify and streamline the rules we have for capital markets. It wants to make financial markets more integrated across the EU by reducing fragmentation. And it wants to strengthen the supervisory convergence across Europe 27. ESMA, the European Markets and Securities and Markets Authority, will become a much bigger role under this market integration package. And MISP is really a comprehensive reform package. So it has three big blocks. So first, we have a master regulation that will change a plethora of existing rules. So it has, if you want to give it a read, 308 pages of just amendments to existing European regulations, which I will tell you about a bit more in a second. And then we have the master directive, which will change parts of the Markets and Financial Instruments Directive, which is the MiFID II, which is basically the framework for investment firms right now in Europe. And it will change the Alternative Investment Fund Manager Directive, which is the regulation for everything fund management in Europe. So, and as a third piece, we have also a new settlement finality regulation. Currently, we just have a directive. Maybe to give you a bit of background here, a regulation is then directly applicable, whereas a directive needs to be implemented. So there will be on settlement finality. We will have the same rules throughout Europe then. And this regulation is making sure that transfers of collateral are legally watertight and also transfers of securities. I already mentioned that there is this master regulation, which will change a bunch of European regulations. So basically, the main ones, which are also relevant for our topic today, are the CSDR, which is the Central Securities Depositories Regulation, which is basically the regulation for the European settlement systems and clearing systems. So it is the ones for the Clearstreams and Euroclear, which are their basic regulations. Then, as you already mentioned, the DLT pilot regime, or the DLTR, which is the regime for DLT-based market infrastructures. They will also see a huge change or amendments to it. And then there is the Markets and Crypto Assets Regulation, the MiCA, which will see also some changes, but more on the side who will be supervising who. And then we have the EMIR, which is the European Market Infrastructure Regulation, which is basically the regulation for OTC derivatives trading, derivatives clearing, including collateralization of derivatives. And it's the framework also for central counterparties, so for CCPs. Then there is MiFIR. I will stop then in a second, but you see the list is long, which is the Markets and Financial Instruments Regulation. We will see also some changes with regard to trading venues therein. And then we have Securities Financing Transaction Regulations and CCP Recovery Regulation and on Benchmark Regulation. So you see it's really a big project that Europe has under their agenda. And given that there are that many regulations that will be amended, the timeline for implementation is not, it's a longer transition period. So not Q1 of next year, but let's say more like 3 years or so, as there will be consultation phases, of course, and parliament will also have a say in it. And afterwards, as with every financial regulation in Europe, you have the level 2 and level 3 acts coming out. So this master regulation and the market integration package is level 1, as we say, and then there will be technical standards issued by Commission and then also by ESMA, who will have her opinions and guidelines on how to interpret the frameworks. And so it will take quite a while until we have this package live.
When you say there's a long transition period, is there still an aim to finalize the legal text until then it needs to be implemented and then also the extensive level 2 and 3 work will start and will be finalized? Or is the timeline for the finalization of the text also still a longer one?
I guess the finalization of the text will not take that long. So we might see this then next year, but until it's then really applicable and until the market will need to adopt, it will take longer.
So as a summary, Europe is known for its regulation. And here, in this case, there's really a significant change in many, many areas of capital markets regulation. And if I understand it correctly, it's really also to become technology neutral or also, you know, embracing blockchain-based infrastructures or implementing or including blockchain infrastructures in the existing regulations to make it technology neutral, and the much stronger role of the ESMA. Now, the focus of this podcast is clearly also the DLT impact. Could you give us an overview of how the DLT pilot regime so far, which is part of the package as well, has been developing? I mean, it's now, I think, 2 years in, and there hasn't been lots of uptick so far. Maybe you give us a little overview of what the DLT pilot regime is and what will change now to this new regulation.
Happy to do that. So I think it was in March 2023 when we had our episode on the pilot regime. So maybe it's around like 3 years already in place, but I think the first licenses were issued done in 2024. So it's, yeah, as you said, like 2 years now, we see actually players in the market that are operating under the DLT pilot regime. And you can basically think of it as a more or less a real life experiment of the EU to have DLT based trading venues and DLT based settlement systems in Europe. And as you already mentioned, it's supposed to be a sandbox regime. But considering a sandbox, which sounds easy to enter, it's not that easy to enter. It's actually a whole license application process you have to deal with. We did this with a lot of clients, helped them navigating, also steering the national competent authorities, so in Germany, BaFin, and also then with the European regulator, with ESMA. You have a lot of discussions how you're setting up your infrastructures and how you provide that you have an actual delivery versus payment process and so on. But maybe to give you the basic idea of the DLT pilot regime, it's basically we have blockchains and we have DLT-based financial instruments, so they could be useful for capital markets. But we have existing rules. As I already mentioned, we have this MiFID and MiFIR, and we have also the CSD regulation, which are written for centralized infrastructures with several intermediaries in place, accounts, batch settlements involved. So the EU created a time-limited pilot framework, this DLT pilot regime, which allows DLT-based market infrastructures to operate and to give them targeted exemptions from the current regulations they would need to apply otherwise. So the idea was to give the regulators, but also the industry, a kind of framework where they could practice and see which rules and rule books actually need to be adjusted then. So to give you a bit of an overview what you actually can trade under the pilot regime, it's quite a narrow regime. So you have several financial instruments that won't be able to be traded on a DLT trading venue. So you have only shares with a certain volume limit, and you have UCITS funds and basically plain vanilla bonds. So derivatives trading is currently not possible under the regime. Although the market is saying we need that, because therefore it makes actually sense to have a DLT-based system for derivatives trading. So it's really a narrow system, but this was intentional by the regulators. And then we have some size limits when it comes to the overall trading volume as well. So it's really a limited system. In practice, as I already said, getting into the regime is still a significant undertaking. So it's a whole license application process. You need a robust governance systems and operating model. So you're basically a fully fledged CSD or a fully fledged trading venue, but you get some exemptions from which are then not possible because you operate on a DLT. So certain functions you would need to have under the CSDR, you might not be able to implement, but then you have to explain why you use DLT and why it's you cannot apply this rule. So this is how it basically works. And what's interesting as well is that you can, under this regime, use also e-money tokens, so digital money, to settle the trades of tokenized shares or so. And this was quite something new, because normally you have central bank solutions that you would use and central bank money in which you would settle securities and financial instruments. So this is basically what the DLT pilot regime is about. And you have basically three models that you can choose that you want to operate. You have the so-called DLT MTF, which is a trading venue for DLT financial instruments. You have the DLT SS, which is a settlement system. And then what was really new and is the DLT TSS, which is a trading and settlement system, which combines both trading and settlement, which is, do not see this in normal capital markets. I would say the trading and the settlement infrastructures are always separated from each other. But this was really something which came more or less from the crypto trading venues, one needs to say, like the Krakens and Coinbases, which all combine trading and settlement infrastructures. So this is quite cool then to operate such a system, I would say, or where I would say this is really where the DLT pilot regime makes sense. You also asked why it didn't take off, if I recall correctly. Yeah. Sorry, I keep on rambling here. After now, 3 or 2 years, we can say the pilot regime hasn't really taken off. So I think we have 10, 11 players or so in Europe which are using this regime. And a big reason why there are not that many is its scale, I would say, because you have these limitations, you have volume restrictions, you have product restrictions on the financial instruments which you can actually trade on the venue. So operating a market infrastructure is really a network business. So you need issuers, you need investors, you need liquidity, and all at the same time. But given those tight limits, the market didn't really find all of these pieces. So I would say it's then also uncertainty, because this pilot regime that we have today is limited also in time. So it's like 6 years from the moment you get your license. And I think building such a huge infrastructure and having implementation costs and really upfront costs, and then not being sure if this regime will be in place also after 6 years, it's quite something where bigger players at least decided, okay, we will wait and see how this turns out. So basically, it's like classic chicken and egg problem, right? Without liquidity, trading is unattractive. Without trading, issuers hesitate. And without issuers, you don't get liquidity. And then for the market operators, it's really a question, okay, can I make money with this right away? Or is it like a future investment saying, I want to build my infrastructure now on DLT, but do I need to enter this regime, or can I just do it without the regime and I'm building in a background, I would say.
Yeah, and I mean, it's a bit strange because this TSS role, to my view, is such an innovative setup, right? Where everything, as you said, that we see in the crypto space with the Krakens and the other crypto exchanges, that settle cash in the form of stablecoins and the crypto assets, in this case, then in the future also tokenized securities, for example, happen on the same platform. That should attract actually all those players, right? Hopefully, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And maybe then what is now then, or what will change under MISP, because this is what I'm telling you now, is people have, or the market has said this already 3 years ago or 4 years ago when the pilot regime was in the consultation process. So we don't need these limitations, or we don't want these limitations, because it will lead to nobody entering the regime. I mean, not nobody, but not that many as expected. And this is now where this market integration package comes in. So you can really read it as a response to the market demand. So the pilot regime was a start, but now the market has been asking right from the beginning for a framework that can actually scale. So not just the sandbox. So I think we will see, or what MISP proposes is there are very high volume caps. So not 6 billion, but like 100 billion that you can actually trade, like an overall trading volume. And you won't have product limitations. So you don't have those limitations, what products can be actually listed, which is good. So let the market decide what they actually want to trade. And you don't have time restrictions. So this will be a regime you can enter, and you don't have those 6 years already on the horizon. So this is really good. And it will make feel DLT and the infrastructure less like a special exception, but more like a normal infrastructure option that one can choose. And this is, I think, it's a good start. But from a perspective of time, I would say it comes a bit too late. So as said, this was already requested a while ago when the first regime started. So in my opinion, we should now really try to carve out this whole DLT pilot regime from the market integration package to kind of have a process that is a bit faster, because I think it's quite clear what will come now for the DLT pilot regime. It just makes sense to have those amendments and, yeah, for not to wait another 3 years, so to say, until we have those amendments. And if it's not possible to carve it out of this legislative process now, the European Commission should really think about issuing a no action letter for the time, at least when it comes to the products that can be listed, and maybe also to the volume restrictions, that they won't act on it, or the national regulators shouldn't act on it. So it really makes sense to have the proper regime. Because when you look at the US I mean, they have their big securities depository like the TCC. They just got a no action letter from the SEC in December 2025 to basically operate on DLT, and they can custody assets which are based on DLT. So it's really, for them, it's really a big change. But as said, it's just a no action letter, so no application involved. And I think to be European, or in Europe, we should try to be also a attractive regime, because we had this right like 3 years ago already. So
it's not a new debate, right? That this whole DLT pilot regime is over-regulated, let's say, and restrictive when it comes to especially the product definition and the volume restrictions. When you now look at the other areas as well, so there's the CSDR reform, there's EMIR, MIFIR, MICAR, as we discussed. We also see some amendments with regards to the inclusion of blockchain or DLT systems, or at least if they are not directly included, that they become technology neutral, right? Where do we see the new technology entering now the traditional, the more traditional regulations like CSDR and EMIR and MIFIR?
Yeah. So when you look at the CSDR, so which is basically, as already said, the regulation for our central securities depositories, so the ones who are keeping the system of who owns what. So you can think of them as the custodians for custodians, or the custodian for banks who trade securities for their clients. There in the CSDR, we will see that it also will include DLT-based systems. So it's explicitly written in, regardless of the infrastructure, it can be DLT-based, which is really acknowledging that this infrastructure is really something that we will see in the future, or already today, that settlement systems are built on. And as you maybe also have read in the news, that a big exchange in the US also mentioned every security I will issue in the future will be DLT-based. So I think we see a major shift. Also here in Germany, I think Deutsche Börse said the same. So it's really something, it's a bit of a no-brainer to do that. And I think also today we see in Germany, we have like the Clearstreams, they already have infrastructures which are DLT-based, which they are also using. So it's, I wouldn't say that it was necessary in CSDR to actually include DLT, because I would read it today and say it's not excluded to use DLT. But it gives, of course, for the market infrastructures, operators, it gives them clarity and security that they can actually leverage on DLT infrastructures, which is really cool, I would say. So basically, the second issue under CSDR would be the cash lag. So I think for tokenized securities, they cannot fully deliver if you don't have the payment lag covered. So, and it would make sense to have payment rails where those securities can actually like talk to or interact. And now the market integration package draft for the CSDR opens a path to settle payments, also in e-money tokens. So these are the regulated stable coins under MiCA, so basically stable coins. But here where it gets a bit practical is the draft talks about things like pre-funding. So you need tokenized money or stable coins that are pre-funded upfront, and also they are need to be available at the CSD level then for the market participants to use them. And then it will be, under the current draft, it will need to be significant e-money tokens. So under the MiCA regime, we have like regular stable coins, and then there are significant e-money tokens, which need to apply a bit of a higher regime or are under more scrutiny from the regulator. As of today, we don't have significant e-money tokens in Europe. I guess this might then change if it opens up a new business area, or we might consider, okay, do we really need significant e-money tokens? But maybe they would need to have certain volume or in order to be legible here under the CSDR. And finally, there is a question of where are the accounts? So if a CSD doesn't settle in central bank money, as said, we can use stable coins. Who's then actually holding those stable coins? So because it's still like maybe a banking business, it might be if you hold funds for others. And so a CSD can use another current draft, a credit institution or another CSD who has a license for a banking business. But I think there it's a bit not strange, but I see the where they are coming from. But as of today, in order to hold stable coins, you also require a MiCA license as a custodian. So it might make sense to also open this regime for actual custodians who operate such infrastructures, like holding key material in a secure way. So there it might make sense to open this regime as well for them and not just for credit institutions, because I know maybe there are some credit institutions who already operate their own infrastructures, but I think it might be complex business to set up then also such infrastructures and to get the right players in place then.
That's the CSDR, ultimately the Central Securities Depositories embracing now also these new settlement assets. EMIR is also another area where the ESMA shall also have an enhanced role and also look at EMTs and actually also tokenized money market funds. What is part of the package here at EMIR?
Yeah, so maybe for the eager listeners, give you a bit of a background what EMIR then actually is. So it was after the financial crisis back then, 2008, 2009, it was the risk control framework for derivatives. So it covers derivatives clearing via central counterparties and also then collateral provision for OTC derivatives and margining. So overarching goal for all our financial regulations are, of course, financial stability. And here, when it comes to tokenization, I think we see in the market now a lot of developments around tokenized money market funds, which are also, or money market funds can be used under certain circumstances also as collateral, but mainly you would use cash as collateral. And we see under the market integration package that in other regimes like CSDR, that there is explicitly mentioned that cash can also be e-money tokens, so stable coins. And we don't have that under EMIR. So I would say it just would make sense to also include cash, not only like central bank money, but to include actually also e-money tokens. Might they be significant or not? It would make sense if you also have really an infrastructure that is DLT-based where you also want to trade your derivatives. So this is more like a recommendation.
I was about to ask, this is not what is currently discussed.
No, it's not. No, it should be. I think it would make sense. If we now have this big package and touch EMIR, they should consider it to have a consistent framework done. And also to include that you can actually use tokenized money market funds as collateral to exchange maybe those between the counterparties, because most of them, what they're doing today is often that they exchange cash as margin, as collateral, and then they take those cash, they invest it into money market funds or short-term commercial papers. At the end of the day, they exchange it back into cash, and then they exchange it with their counterparty again. So to maybe avoid those also then shortages on the markets, might make sense to maybe exchange directly money market funds, shares, or the like. So I think this is something that's worth considering under EMIR. It's, as said, not currently included, but it would make definitely sense and maybe should be part of the discussion as well.
Before we jump back into today's episode, a quick word about an event close to our hearts, the Point Zero Forum, an annual gathering of over 2,000 policymakers, central bankers, regulators, and industry leaders at the intersection of finance, technology, and policy. BFRR is proud media partner of the Point Zero Forum, and we'll be reporting live on site with the full co-host team. Organized by the Global Finance and Technology Network and the Swiss State Secretariat of Finance, the Point Zero Forum takes place in Zurich from 23rd to 25th June 2026. This year's lineup includes Swiss Federal Councillor Karin Keller-Sutter, Teva CEO Paolo Arduino, former crypto head of policy at Andreessen Horowitz, Brian Quintens, and NVIDIA's EMEA financial technology lead, Dr. Jochen Papenbrock. The agenda covers everything from AI in financial services and digital assets of stablecoins, tokenization, and the new regulatory frontier where the rules of finance are being rewritten. come meet us in Zurich. Register at pointzeroforum.com, and as a BFRR listener, you get 30% off the full price industry pass with code BFRR2026. I repeat, BFRR2026.
So CSDR has explicit recognition of DLT, but EMIR not yet, at least for the settlement asset, for settling cash and money market funds. And then there's the MIFIR, which is the Markets and Financial Instruments Regulation, and clearly also the MICAR, the Markets and Crypto Assets Regulation, where there's also adjustments, right, in this MISP. What's happening there?
Yeah, so basically on a MIFIR, it's not that much DLT related, but what they're basically saying for this whole capital markets integration, and we need a regime for trading venues that is throughout the EU 27 is basically the same. So today the regulation for trading venues is based on MIFID 2, which is a directive, which I said, which needs to be implemented by the member states. So there might be some differences, and also the regulators might see something differently than the other ones when you're setting up your trading venue there. So that's why the regulation around trading venues moves into the MIFIR, which is a regulation which is then directly applicable. And also there will be some new types of trading venues, so like a cross-border trading venue, a European trading venue you could jump under if you want to. And they want to try that really, that you don't have to set up a new trading venue if you want to operate in another member state. So you can use the one in your national member states if you want to offer your services cross-border, which is good, I think, for avoiding that liquidity is then kind of...
Fragmented.
Fragmented, yes. And looking then to MiCA, which is the regulation for crypto assets, there will be a bigger change of who will supervise those crypto asset service providers. For the ones that only offer crypto asset services, they will potentially be then under the ESMA supervision, so the European regulator, which is a big shift because today it's still the national authorities, so in Germany, BaFin, or like FMA in Austria and such. And this is really a big shift to have then the application and ongoing supervision under one roof at ESMA. So which will lead to basically there will be a harmonized view on how MiCA needs to be read and interpreted. But I think it might also come with some detriments because having a good relation to your national regulator is something good. And if you have established it well, it's really useful, I would say. But of course, you won't have those arbitrage regulators where you could say, okay, if I go to Malta, it might not be regarded as highly than going to the French or German regulator. And I think another piece will be, of course, that ESMA will need to significantly amp up their staff. Really find people that are willing to move to France and to Paris. I mean, not the worst city in the world, but... I think this will need some time, and also then to build up your relationship might be quite, it will be interesting because I think this is something that ESMA tries to get more power. We have seen this also under the MIFID. So for the investment firms, that there were talks about bringing ESMA in as the main supervisor. So it will be interesting to see. And I guess, it will go through under the market integration package, but let's see. You never know how European regulations will end up in the end.
Does this then lead also to a recertification or a reapplication of licenses that were granted by the national supervisory authorities, or is that not part of it?
No, I think it's not really a reapplication. It's more like then a transition and a handover of the regulated businesses. But I think they cannot really take your license you already have, but it will be then a transition period and a handover from the national regulators.
And if there are any open discussions with the national regulators, then likely transitioning that into a new regulator comes with challenges, right?
Yes. I mean, it's already burdensome if not your unit changes, but if your case handler moves to another unit and then you have new case handlers, which is also you have
start to afresh again.
Really building up relationships and educating them about your business model, how it works. Yeah, it's quite something. And in this field of crypto assets and DLT based infrastructures, I think it's really, really crucial to have people and staff at the regulator side as well who want to understand what's actually happening there.
Yeah, and potentially even stalling a bit the development again simply by changing the regulator and building up this new framework over the next years, right? This will, as we discussed in the beginning, take quite some time, likely, until that is going to be done, right? This is not something that will be done this year, but rather over the next years, there's this transition phase. Then.
Yes, correct.
Wow. So we've covered a lot under this MISP, under this overarching markets integration supervisory package regulation. What would you say as a, let's say, summary maybe? How do you look at the MISP from your perspective as the overall assessment? We've heard that it opens up chances for more harmonized regulation, but then also, you know, bringing out all these complexities with new regulation, new regulators. How do you look at it overall?
I think overall, it's good that we have now this package and that we will make sure that DLT-based infrastructures really can be used, can be integrated. And from a time perspective, I would say this should come much faster to make it applicable for the market and to have this clarity, because other jurisdictions are not asleep, right? So we see in the US, I mean, you never know what will happen in the US and how things will change in some years, you don't know. But we see also Asian regimes coming up. And so it's really, to be an attractive market, I think it's really crucial that we use this momentum and don't lose it. And yeah, but overall, I would say it's good that we have it. And as said, some of the frameworks, it might be worth carving out in order to have the speed and to build up our markets then for the future.
Like the pilot regime, where we really want to see some developments, but waiting for two or three more years, then also the 6 years are progressing, right?
Yes, correct, correct.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah, Annika, thanks a lot for this overview. Is there anything else that you would want to give to our listeners on this overall package that they should know about?
So I would say follow what's happening there and use the time for consultation if you want to change anything. And maybe we should have given out a trigger warning at the beginning that this is a very nerdy episode on regulation. So no, but thanks for listening. And yeah, if you have any questions, keep in touch.
Yeah, I think it's an important area that many people are not that involved in, that don't follow the regulatory frameworks of Europe. But clearly this has a huge impact on the business and on the adoption of this new technology within Europe, where, again, Europe follows a regulation path, or like a dedicated regulation path, and now hopefully harmonizes it, hopefully faster as currently planned, to basically catch up with those jurisdictions that basically only give no action letters and then allow the market participants to develop, especially what we see in the US at the moment. So yeah, still a developing area, and let's see how this new regulatory framework helps Europe to provide solutions ultimately that are used. So yeah. Annika, thanks a lot for all these insights. I suggest let's revisit this topic maybe in a couple of months or years to see how the progress is looking like. And always a pleasure to have you on the podcast.
I wanted to say the same. Let's meet here in maybe 1 year's time. Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure as always.
Yeah. Thanks, dear listeners, for listening in. I hope this was an interesting and helpful content. And yeah, then see and hear you next time. Bye-bye.
The views expressed are solely the personal opinions of the hosts and are provided for informational purposes only. This podcast does not offer financial or investment advice. Always conduct your own research and make well-informed decisions before investing. Please be aware that the hosts and guests may hold cryptocurrencies or digital assets discussed in this episode.